At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
And Trapper Mike Blewett back with you. Sean Engel behind the glass, keeping me entertained as we rejoin here. Time to talk some cooking, Mike. I know that's what you expected when we logged on to do our show today. But a couple of stories out of Major League Baseball around cooking. And who doesn't get injured when cooking? I mean, let's be honest. We've cut fingers. We've burned a finger or a hand or caused some sort of other injury. But two injuries in spring training this spring training. One, Brandon Nimmo. We have a story that circulated widely. Maybe you have evidence to the contrary. And we have Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly first. Joe Kelly on the shelf currently for the Dodgers because and what they're deeming is a sore back due to cooking for too long. Los Angeles Dodgers manager Dave Roberts said hard-throwing right-hander Joe Kelly was scratched from his scheduled appearance on Wednesday. Will throw lightly on Friday in hopes he can get into a game in a couple of days. Kelly felt tightness in his back on Wednesday. Robert said Kelly told him he hurt his back when he stood too long cooking Cajun food.
As somebody that's had back issues over the course of their life, I have sympathy for this. This is really just his back got tight because he was standing up too long. The cooking thing is a funny component to it, but it wasn't like years ago. This is probably more than 10 years ago. There was two kickers, both the punter and the kicker on the Jaguars. One of them had to go on IR because they were making fondue and one of them slipped and burned themselves with, you can Google this, and burned themselves with the hot fondue, whatever it was, cheese or whatever was in, I suppose, was in there. And the guy was out for a month, maybe even been IR'd. So that was the all-time worst cooking injury I've heard in sports. So this one pales in comparison, but nonetheless, it seems like he's got a little bit of back issue right now. They just signed him to a 3-year, $25 million deal from the Sox or the offseason. You know, I read a really interesting article about Joe Kelly in The Athletic a couple of weeks back about how he's overcome a lot in his life and family struggles and all that kind of stuff. And he's got an interesting attitude. He was not a guy that was on any radar in high school, and he just worked his tail off, and he plays with a massive chip on his shoulder. He talks a lot of trash, and that's just the way he's going to be. He's kind of unapologetic about it, and it was interesting. You know, as a Yankees fan, Joe Kelly was not like, he's not a guy that endears himself to the opposing team. He just gets in people's face, and that's just the way he plays. But when you read this article, it's pretty interesting. I will say this, because I read the article, yeah, I developed not a soft spot for him, but I understand like how he is, and that would suck to be out for because he stood up too long.
Well, and also have your manager out there sharing that. Like, right, maybe you go in and say, listen, I was standing too long. I was cooking up some of my Cajun food. We'll get better, and I won't do that again. And then to have the manager relate that to the media may not be what you want. And to your point, I'm reading as well the follow-up. So the story was that Brandon Nimmo had the stomach bug. And then a couple of days later, it came out that he had, in fact, gotten himself sick by cooking chicken or undercooking chicken. And so salmonella. For those of you who are Mets fans or not even and want a good laugh, Brandon Nimmo's wife on Twitter was hysterical about the entire situation. She just went after him. Like, I mean, absolutely went after him.
He's an idiot. He's an idiot if he undercooked chicken and got himself sick.
And so she just had a good time, and there was some good back and forth between her and fans, and honestly, from a baseball fan perspective, you like to see that there's some levity and some kindness to the interactions there. But as you've pointed out, it was in fact a virus that got Nimmo sick. So you can check him off from the cooking classes at least at present.
Maybe they're covering for him.
What was that?
Maybe they're covering for him. Maybe he did get himself sick, and they're trying to, unlike Dave Roberts, maybe Mickey Callaway is trying to protect his guy and not throw him under the bus.
Well, let's be honest. We know that the Mets medical staff has been nothing but accurate over the past 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
So,
bang up job in Queens.
We can chalk this up to water under the bridge, water under the pan of the undercooked chicken. Listen, I'm gonna use listen here for those of you out there cooking. just cook the chicken enough. Just make sure it's cooked. If it's pink, you don't eat it. It's pretty straightforward. So that ends the
chicken's
cooking
not a hard
show.
One, man. Chicken's not a hard one.
No pork.
You just got to go all the way. Yeah.
Right. Pork can
There's
be difficult.
No, yeah, you know, you get a little bit of red meat, you want to eat it a little rare, it's fine. I wouldn't do it, but it's fine. But with chicken, you just got to go all the way, man. Chicken, turkey, poultry, you just got to go. Just give it an extra minute or two to make sure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. If you don't think it's cooked enough, cook it more. Like, that's it. Just put it back on. You're not ordering chicken rare ever, that is for sure. The Major League Baseball spring training is barreling on, and there are going to be plenty of stories that we'll cover here on the network, but also Mike and I will take on over the next couple of weeks. I'm excited. I get to go down on Friday for Tout Wars to join the head-to-head points league on Friday night. So looking forward to discussing that on Saturday with George. I know, Mike, you are not with us next weekend, but...
Correct.
We will...
Sorry to miss Tout Wars weekend. I this is the second year in a row. I've had to miss it. I'm traveling, going down to Charleston, South Carolina next weekend. I've never been, so just a little bit of R&R. It's a bad weekend to do it, but it's the only one I could squeeze in. Historically, in the past, I've traveled to all these basketball tournaments during March, and I've gone to Final Fours. This year, I'm not going to be doing that, so I'm taking the opportunity to go on this really quick 48-hour trip to Charleston. So I'll report back, and I'll be listening.
I've heard delightful things about Charleston in the past. Hope you have a great time. And we will tackle some NCAA work next weekend as well, as all of that rolls out in Selection Sunday and the like. So look forward to talking about that.
Really late this year, Selection Sunday.
It's really. I kept struggling with the fact that the conference tournaments haven't started yet.
Like, it's on St. Patrick's Day, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's been one of those keep expecting to happen, and you have regular season games. Duke, UNC, I think, again tonight. I haven't seen any news as whether Williamson will suit up or not. I know he's been questionable heading into the past couple of games and has not suited up. Should be a fun one. Always is. I get frustrated with that rivalry, like I'm sure Red Sox, non-Red Sox, non-Yankee fans get fed up with Boston, New York being all over ESPN and every other outlet whenever they play. But it should be a good one. And there are a lot of good college teams. And I get that some people don't love college basketball. It's not as good as the NBA. I just enjoy watching it more. I enjoy the fun of the tournament and the fun of the conference tournaments than I do over the NBA pretty much any day. You take the professional level. Sure, I love watching them be good at the sport. But the fun of the college game, I'll take any week. I do want to, I know you've in the past covered and been more involved in college because of work commitments and the like. This year, not as much. Is there a March Madness or a college basketball game that sticks out for you, something that you attended or saw because of work commitments that as we start rolling towards conference tournaments and start thinking about the NCAA tournament that is around the corner, one that stands out really for you as your go-to storytell?
Well, I would say a couple of things in general. It's just a general comment. People do tend to wait around for the NCAA tournament to get into March Madness.
Yep.
But I actually think you're doing yourself a disservice because there are times where that first weekend of the tournament, it's always fun, but you might not see as many upsets in a given year as you would expect to. So I would tell you that March Madness has already started.
Yep.
What people tend to not do is watch the conference tournaments. Now, big-time college basketball fans are locked in already. But I would say that generally, the conference tournaments are where you see some amazing basketball being played. Even at the mid-major to low-major level, these teams are trying to kill each other to get to the tournament, just to get a bid, to potentially get blown out by Duke or somebody else. But I'm telling you, you're missing out if you're not watching. Just throw on ESPN or Fox or whatever after you listen to our show and right. See what's coming on. I guarantee today's a full slate, noon to midnight. I guarantee it. And tomorrow and all through next week, you're going to have games on all different times of day, starting at noon all throughout the day. You'll have ACC games starting next I think on Tuesday, you'll have ACC games on Tuesday, on Wednesday, all through the week. Same with Big 12, SEC, Big 10. And the low majors, you're going to start getting into championship games probably starting tomorrow. It may even be one today, but so do that. But I guess I would be, and as far as my personal storytelling, so I saw the Final Four down in Atlanta, and that was Wichita, Louisville, Syracuse and Michigan, and that Louisville-Wichita game was electric because Wichita was winning, and right. Louisville's Luke Hancock hit like three threes in the second half, and the place went bananas, and that was fun, but the best game I ever went to is what people probably consider to be the greatest ending in the history of college basketball. I was in Houston for the Final Four that had North Carolina and Villanova that ultimately faced off in the championship game. And Chris Jenkins hit the buzzer beater to win the national championship. So that's a hard one to beat. It's the only true buzzer beater in the history of the NCAA championship game. The irony of that is that game was amazing, but the Final Four games that year were absolutely awful. Villanova beat Oklahoma by 45. It was
right.
An annihilation. Yep. It was a Buddy Hield Oklahoma team, and the obvious, you know, there's a bunch of pros from that Villanova team now, Brunson and a bunch of these other guys that are in the league now, Josh Hart, some of those other guys. But that was an incredible game. But they beat, they shot the lights out all throughout that tournament. And against Oklahoma, it was incredible. It was probably a 25, 27 point game at halftime. It got worse. It was really unbelievable. And then North Carolina played Syracuse and kind of ran them off the floor. It wasn't as big of a blowout, but ran them off the floor. And there was no energy, there was no juice in the building at all. It's hard for there to be juice in those arenas because it's 75,000 people watching a basketball right. game. It's not a great experience always in person. I sat near Villanova, so it was a lot more fun. But that game, Nova had like an 11-point lead in the championship game with 4 minutes left. And I remember looking up and being like, they can't do it. There's just not enough time. They won't be able to come back. And they did. And they tied it on a crazy double pump shot from, help me out, Dan, the point guard from Carolina then. Damn it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember it. It's a double pump three-pointer to tie it. and Nova only had 4.5 seconds to come down, and they ran a perfect play. It was like right out of their playbook. 1, 2, 3 passes, bang, knocked down the three-pointer. Chris Jenkins won it. So that's going to be a hard one to beat.
That one sticks out in my mind, too. I watched it on TV, but being there had to have been an experience in and of itself. And to Mike's point, the conference tournaments almost, not almost always, but a good deal of the time are more exciting, and especially the small. And again, is it what Dr. James Naismith had in mind when he invented basketball? Maybe not. It's not exactly ballet out there. It's a little bit more rough and tumble at times. You do have lower shooting percentages, and it's not the Golden State Warriors that you're watching. But there is a certain level of passion and do or die mentality to these conference tournaments, and especially for these mid-majors and small schools.
That's the real do or die. Like Radford in the Big South, I guess that's their. I think that's their league. I may have that wrong. Where the hell Belmont?
I think that's right. Isn't it Wolford and Radford are in the same? I think there are a few different Ferds in the Big South.
But you know, Belmont or Radford or Texas Southern, they don't have even the most optimistic of their fans or their players or their coach. Don't think they're going to get on a run to win the NCAA tournament. But if you're a 4 seed in that conference and you haven't quite had the year you've gotten, and none of the guys or the coach have ever gotten to the NCAA tournament as a head coach or as a player before, you have a chance. You're playing in your league against some of your blood rivals trying to win to get to the tournament and maybe win a game there. Maybe you're this year's UMBC. That is very intense, and I've been to many of those games in my life, and they're a ton of fun. I've been all over the country watching all of those different tournaments for years. I'm glad to not have to do it this year, to be honest, to take a break on the travel, but those games are a lot of fun. Whether you're in person or at home, I'm just telling you, watch a Manhattan-Iona game. You'll see. It's entertaining.
Was it Marcus Page? Is that who the
that's
point guard?
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, that's right.
I needed to find that answer for you and for myself because that was rattling around in the back
Drive
of the brain.
Nuts, yeah.
So Marcus Page and then Chris Jenkins, a crazy finish in that one, and one that will go down most likely as the best as time gets further away. I know people like to point to some craziness in earlier round games. You always hear about Leitner, but that won it all. So it has to have a little bit more merit to it as you go through. We have two more segments left here on our radio program. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA and then recap our top stories in the final segment we have as we lead you up to the top of the hour. It's Cam and George with the weekend sports update. They will be on with you. Make sure to download the app. Take us with you wherever you are going. The tournaments that are underway are good ones, too. So as Mike said, maybe keep George and Cam on the earphones, fire up the television, and start joining in the fun in college basketball as we go through. But plenty still to get to. I want to touch on the Lakers situation. I know it's been a big topic of conversation across multiple outlets. I want to talk about that as well as we get inundated with takes on LeBron James and what's going on with the Lakers and where they move forward. Dan Strafford, Mike Blewett here, Fantasy Sports Day. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're with you every Saturday morning, 8 to 11 a.m. right here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, FNTSY.com/radio, and so much more. Thanks so much for listening. Back with more on the other side of the spring.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Dan Stratford, Mike Blewett with you. Sean Angle behind the glass, getting us in and out of breaks flawlessly here. Mike, it's that time of the show where I get a little upset. My voice goes, I kid. Just kidding. I have to clear the throat ever so gently here. But we want to transition a bit to the NBA and want to get your take on media at large. And I know it's sort of meta and self-serving to talk about the media on a sports radio show. But I was traveling earlier in the week, and I was in Austin, Texas. Sorry, guys. I was in Austin, Texas, and when you're in a hotel, you get a certain number of channels, right? And one of those channels is inevitably always ESPN. And I left the network on, and I would say for a good 75% of a three-hour program, all they did was talk about LeBron James. All they talked about. LeBron, the Lakers, them not going to make the playoffs. Obviously, when you do media, you understand that what the audience wants is what drives the content that you're doing. But does anyone really want 75% of a show to be just about LeBron James and the Lakers? Is that really where we're at, that they're not making – it's that big a story that a poorly constructed roster with an aging star isn't making the playoffs?
I think you're spot on, but we've seen this before. It's not just them. They cater to where their traffic is going, and their site traffic may be ruling how things are programmed and vice versa. So they have some insight on LeBron James. They have a big partnership with the NBA. Insight, meaning they have people that follow him closely.
Right.
So they've got a lot invested in him, and if it increases website traffic and increases engagement across platforms, then unfortunately for more in-depth sports fans like you and myself and others, it doesn't really serve what they're doing. I think you've seen this in the past with Tim Tebow stories just getting just beaten into the ground when the guy was a third stringer on the Jets. We were seeing stories about how, Tebow refused to go in a tight end. Like, just really ridiculous, minuscule micro stories on Tim Tebow to try and extract every last ounce of blood out of the story. We see it. I think you're seeing this with LeBron. It helps that he's an uber star, beyond superstar. But it is insane. At some point, why don't we just do stories about Giannis? And why don't we do stories about, I was watching a little game last night. Denver was playing the Warriors. And yep. I don't even know what happened there. The Warriors were blowing off the floor in the first quarter. So I don't even know how the game ended up. But, it was interesting to hear Van Gundy and the crew talk about Nikola Jokic and what a good player he is, and how Van Gundy said he is possibly the greatest big man passer in the history of the NBA. He's like only 40 years in, and he's saying he might be the biggest big man passer of all time. Like, doing stories on guys like that. Now, I'm an NBA. I watch the NBA, so I already know who he is. But I think doing stories like that is more interesting to me, diving in a little bit deeper on him than doing the 50th story of the day on LeBron. Like, I don't really care that they're missing the playoffs. People will use it as some sort of nobody's ever had more referendums put on their career than LeBron James, and people use this as another one to say why he's not as good as this guy or not as good as that guy, and I told you Jordan was better. Like, I'm done with those stories too, and please don't float me another Mount Rushmore conversation. you want to bore me to tears? Let's do another Mount Rushmore conversation. Although I did like the top five cereals thing that was popular on Twitter this week. That was pretty interesting to me. But nonetheless, it's okay that they're going to miss the playoffs. Like, they suck. They can't shoot.
It's a team that's poorly constructed. And I don't know if that was LeBron's doing after he signed, but they went out and signed a bunch of ISO players like Lance Stephenson and Michael Beasley and a bunch of guys also on one-year contracts, guys who are in it for themselves, meaning not talking about Beasley and Stephenson specifically, but guys who are trying to earn that next contract and not necessarily going to take a back seat at times when they needed to or find their role on a team like this. You also had the Lonzo Ball injury, and that's another note to bring up here that Luke Walton has said that he would not be surprised if Lonzo Ball doesn't play again this year. They haven't discussed it as of yet, but Ball is still a few days, if not a couple of weeks, away from basketball activities. And when you get that far down the road, you start talking about shutting it down. The former number two overall pick has a bone bruise related to a grade three ankle sprain he suffered January 19th. He hasn't been doing anything but dribbling drills and standstill shooting since suffering the injury. We've talked, Mike, about LeBron shutting it down. We haven't seen that yet. We've seen that he is getting a minute restriction, one from what he was upwards of 36 to 40 minutes a game when they're still trying to make a run for the playoffs. Now almost mathematically eliminated or at least trending that way. He's down
look,
to
they've won two of their last 10. If they won their last 17 games, they probably won't make the playoffs.
Right.
They probably can't make the playoffs if they won every game. Because the Spurs and the Clippers just need to go 500, and then they make it.
And you have these changes. If you're looking at the Lakers, and to take it less of a LeBron microscope and more of a Lakers microscope, they will have cap space. But we now have two star potential players that Pelinka and Magic Johnson, or just Magic Johnson, depending on what media stories you read, have bungled. You have the Paul George. They overplayed their hand there and clearly thought that they had Paul George signed, sealed, and delivered to L.A. to play with LeBron and didn't go about spreading around their resources to bring in other maybe less high-level free agents, but ones who could have helped them this year. And then you have this fiasco. Now, Dell Demps obviously fired by New Orleans, but they played it and strung them along, and Magic Johnson was all in, and it was all broadcasted. It was all broadcasted. The team, the individual players, the young guys who knew they were going to get traded, the one-year contract guys who know they're not back next year, seem to have quit on the team. So are you of the mind that the Lakers are in good hands here and can right the ship in the offseason, or is this more of a problem with the front office that's really going to hamper how this team goes about building around LeBron for 2019-2020?
I've said this before. I'm not giving them credit for LeBron, for them getting LeBron to come there. That was a layup. So it's all about what happens now. And is it real that guys don't want to play with LeBron anymore? Like, guys didn't really want to play with Kobe either.
Right.
I mean, it's when you really dive back into it, I don't think everybody wanted to play with Jordan. It's not easy when there's an alpha dog like that that is demanding a lot out of you and, you know, is obviously being, in LeBron's case, like, he gets conceded a lot of things. I don't know if you believe that he was drinking wine on the bench, but that seems unprofessional. And he's been granted a lot of decision-making power in other areas. And when you have a player making decisions that go beyond what's happening on the court, I think players would be uncomfortable with that. Because, like, can my teammate mess with my money? Can my teammate mess with the rest of my career? That isn't a place where I'd want to go. You already know that the deck is stacked when you're dealing with coaches and front offices and how they can jerk you around. But if you got a player doing that, I'm not saying that LeBron isn't in other people's best interests, but I am saying that he's in his own best interest first and above all, as I guess he should be. But you understand why a player might be iffy about going out there, right?
Yeah. I really am. It's a storyline to watch. And I know I just spent some time complaining about Lakers storylines, but this is more about the organization. And to me, less about LeBron and him playing a certain amount of minutes and his poor defensive stance. And, you know, is LeBron bought in or is he already planning his movie career? I don't care. I really don't care about those things. I do care about how the front office, in my viewpoint, has bungled the past few negotiations. And with that, to your point, with LeBron specifically, are you going to get a free agent who wants to go there? Now, Anthony Davis may want out of New Orleans so badly that he is happy to play the Robin to LeBron's Batman as they try to form a super team there for the Lakers. But how about the way the Clippers have been playing? Does Anthony Davis just want to play in L.A.? Does he just want to get out of New Orleans and go play in Los Angeles? Can the Clippers make a run at AD? Do the Knicks have enough assets when all is said and done and we get the ping pong balls and the trade deadline comes around over the summer or the trade
don't
builds
do that
back
to me,
up?
Please. I'm not. I don't think it's going to happen, so I'm not going to convince myself that it will. And even
do you want Anthony Davis?
Yeah, I do want Anthony Davis.
Yeah, okay. The injuries don't concern you.
When you take everything else into account, yeah, I'll take Anthony Davis.
Okay.
I'll take everything into account and then say yes. Yeah, I'd be in on that.
I'd want
they won't
over
get the rookie
Zion Williamson
that they're about
for sure.
to draft,
yeah,
but,
exactly.
You know, obviously, so that goes away. But yeah, I'll take him. I'll always have to consider what they're giving up and, you know, if it all gets stripped down to the bare minimum and then it's Anthony Davis and nobody else, then I might say no, but. Yeah, it's a good place to start. So next year, Lakers salaries committed. LeBron James, $37.5 million. It's nice work if you can get it. Luol Deng, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Mo Wagner, Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart, Isaac Bonga. Those are the only guys with any salary remaining that is committed, that is on the books for the Lakers, I should say. So, they got a lot to work with. You know, we've talked for a long time about the cap space that they've created, and we shall see. But I think it's clear that guys are getting edgy about playing with him and the entire dynamic. I mean, the coach is fired. It sucks, but he was put in an untenable situation.
Right. Some other NBA news to pass along. James Harden had an X-ray on his wrist. He is expected to play on Sunday. This is according to Tim McMahon of ESPN. X-rays on James Harden's wrist were negative. Harden will get treatment and is expected to play Sunday versus Dallas. He left Friday's win over the Sixers briefly in the first half after falling on his wrist and then exited the arena prior to speaking to the media in order to undergo a precautionary X-ray. Suffice to say here, Mike, if James Harden goes down, the Houston Rockets don't win another game. You know, there's enough talent there, but that would be a massive blow of any kind to the Rockets.
Yeah, it's over. Season's over. Luckily, he gets to play on Sunday, so we'll see how he goes. But, you know, they're surging right now. They're playing better. They're obviously, Harden has pulled them through this entire half a season of him scoring 30 points a night. And, you know, they're putting themselves in position to conceivably grab the two seed. So, they'll have to go on the road likely against the Warriors, who have a 2-game lead right now in the Nuggets and 5 on the Rockets. So you would imagine that the Warriors maintain that lead, but nonetheless, the Rockets are putting themselves into position to, you really want to get that 2 seed, because the only time you want to play the Warriors is when it's for all the marbles to get to the NBA championship. You don't want to play them sooner than that. They're only a half game in front of the 4 seed, so you have to consider all this when you're talking about things moving around. But right now, the Rockets are looking like they're making a run at that 2 seed, which would help them greatly.
Wondering your take here. We can carry this over into the next segment as we close out. Don't forget Cam and George coming up top of the hour. Weekend sports update to take you through a few more hours here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am of the mind that, yes, the Golden State Warriors are still the team to beat, but I feel like they look less like the Warriors of old over the past couple of games. Great game against the Nuggets, and they did beat them by 20. Klay Thompson carrying the day for the Warriors. Is there a team in the West that you would at least speculatively maybe place a wager on their future odds to win the NBA Finals this year? You have the Houston Rockets at 15-1, Oklahoma City at 25-1, Denver Nuggets at 30-1, and then you get probably to too far afield, but Utah at 50-1, and Portland sits at 75-1.
I don't think anybody will beat them, but the Thunder interest me, because Steven Adams has managed to get a thorn in their side. Paul George, obviously, in consideration for MVP, and Russ Westbrook being Russ Westbrook. I just don't think they have the depth to compete. And I think Kerr is good enough to – Steve Kerr has talked about this openly. It is hard at times for him to muster the energy to motivate this team.
Right.
They have done so much winning in the regular season and clearly multiple championships right now that it's hard for him to motivate them every night. Last night was a motivating experience. The Nuggets were coming into town. So the first quarter, it was like 22-5. They were killing them early, defending pick and rolls. Just, I mean, they came out hair on fire watching it last night. And you knew the game was over early. But I just think that that's part of it. I think it's part of the deal. And I think come playoff time, you know, they have to get away from not playing in the second quarter and, you know, trying to come out with big third quarters. They got into a little bit of that mode last year, and they're going to have to avoid that because, like you said, maybe it's not, maybe they're not quite what they were last year. But KD and Curry and Cousins, and I mean, Cousins isn't even all the way back yet.
Right.
You have to consider that.
It went 4-6, had 13 points, 6 blocks, 6 rebounds, and enough assists to go 4-6 last night. And that's not playing a ton of minutes, I mean, and not being fully back from the Achilles. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably getting to the point where he's back, but, you know, Cousins might say at the end of the year, I was never really 100%. I'm still around 80, 90. So.
Milwaukee Bucks are 8-1. Toronto Raptors 12-1 out of the East. 76ers 25-1, just to round out some of those odds from the Eastern Conference. We have one more segment to get to. This is going to be a fun playoffs. I think it's not a foregone conclusion, and things could get interesting as we go through. Dan Schaffer, Mike Blewett with you. One more segment to go. Continue a little bit of the NBA talk. Recap some of the top stories from the day and get you ready for the rest of your day in sports. Thanks so much for listening. On the other side of this break, we'll close it out. Fantasy Sports Today.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
It's a revolution in sports talk radio. Dan Schaffer, Mike Blewett here. Bring it to the top of the hour. Cam and George will continue on in our stead as they talk world of sports as well. Weekend sports update right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Catching up on some news that was overnight in the NFL, both Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport reporting. Carlos Hyde visiting the Kansas City Chiefs, Mr. Blewett. We discussed earlier, by the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think there are some who want to see Damian Williams as the lead back there in Kansas City from a skill set perspective and what he brought to the table. Agreed. Do you, if you are, say, a dynasty owner of a Damian Williams, care if a Carlos Hyde is brought in or if a early round running back is drafted? Which do you think is a better situation for Williams owners?
Better situation for Williams owners. I think you have to consider that the Chiefs know that they need a stable of backs. I think we've seen success from a variety of different running backs in that offense.
Yep.
You know, hashtag running backs don't matter. So it's really about the play calls and putting those guys in a position to succeed. But what I would say is that I think this is just indicative of what they're going to do with Charcandrick West and or Spencer Ware. I think one or both of those guys find them their way out of town. They've got Damian Williams, Darrell Williams, then conceivably a Carlos Hyde. He hasn't signed on the dotted line yet, but if I'm him and you get a decent paycheck, I think that's a pretty good place to go. You got a chance to win, and I think he could be a nice change of pace guy there, maybe more reliable than Spencer Ware, who frankly was hurt a lot, even in a part-time role. He and West, you know, just weren't even always available. So I think they're probably looking for somebody that's available more often. So it's more about them. And then Hyde is a late-round flyer, because if he's either going to be a part of the offense throughout or he'll be a guy that if Williams goes down, then Hyde will step right up. But he's more viable than the other two, if that answers your question. He could eat into the carries more regularly than the other two might. And we have yet to see Damian Williams be like a workhorse kind of back. I don't know that you could put that label on him. I think that's a little bit much. So Hyde is a part of this rotation.
And some other of the rule changes, we discussed the Denver Broncos at length earlier, but there are some others that have been released by the operations department at the National Football League. Some of the teams, all the teams have the opportunity to propose rule changes. They then go to the rules committee, they get voted on there, and then they decide if they're going league-wide or not. We talked about the Denver Broncos onside kick proposal. Kansas City Chiefs, obviously a rival of the Broncos during the regular season, have these points about overtime as proposals, and get your take here on the mic. Allow both teams the opportunity to possess the ball at least one time in overtime, even if the first team with the ball scores a TD. Eliminate overtime for preseason games, and eliminate overtime coin toss. So winner of coin toss to begin game may choose whether to kick or receive or which goal to defend at the beginning of overtime itself. Any thoughts therein?
Hang on. Do that again for me. I understand the one possession. Give me the coin flip thing again.
So eliminate the overtime coin toss. So Winner of the coin toss to begin the game may choose whether to kick or receive or which goal to defend to begin overtime. So whoever wins, it's one coin toss, period, full stop.
I like it. I'm torn on it only because I think there's always a reaction to something that just recently happened. You know, there was all this, well, we got to change instant replay because of what happened in the Rams-Saints game. Now it's probably not going to be changed, by the way. It looks like any momentum that was going to occur from that, I think it's disappeared, and I don't expect that to change. So that's one. Two, what happened with the Pats, driving right down the field and scoring a touchdown? People are reacting to it and saying, well, everybody should get a chance to touch the ball. We already did this, and I thought it made sense with the field goal thing that we should it's a little ridiculous that somebody, kicks off, they get the ball to 25. All they got to really do is drive the ball 50 yards to have a 42-yard field goal. Like, that doesn't seem like a lot of effort to win a game in a tightly contested overtime game. So when the rules were changed, I actually didn't mind that adjustment. And I'm not the guy like, well, you got – I think at some point you have to play defense. Like, can you just not let them drive down the field and score a touchdown and convert every third down and every fourth down? If a team takes the ball and drives down the field and scores a touchdown, you're really saying it's unfair?
I think they are. I think people are saying that. Like, I agree with them.
I have a hard time. Now, on the flip side, it's that we're letting a coin toss decide some of these things. And I understand that. But I just, like, at some point, we keep making rules changes to be like, oh, this isn't fair and that isn't fair. Well, just come up with one stop. Don't be offsides, D Ford, and you win.
Yeah. Oh.
Just don't be offsides, and you win. And they're going to trade him, too. They franchised him, and he's probably going to be traded. He doesn't fit the new defensive scheme. Here's the thing. I said earlier about the Rams. Like, the Rams took a run at it, and they're going to lose some pieces. The Chiefs have a bunch of holes now. Like, the Chiefs are not as put together as some of the other teams that were good. I'm not saying that they're going to fall apart. I'm saying the Chiefs have to make some real changes. Justin Houston is on his way out. D Ford was franchise tagged, but they are probably going to trade him.
Yep.
So
Schefter was saying that earlier, too. Yep.
They are Packers and 49ers are expressing interest right now. It is likely because they're switching to a new scheme. Steve Spagnuolo coming in to be their new defensive coordinator. They're switching schemes to a 3-4, and that's not really a D Ford playing a 3-4 defensive end isn't going to work. He's really just a pass rushing outside linebacker. So
maybe the Browns can bring him in.
They actually pretty good pass rush. They could.
That's what I said. Just keep adding
pretty
to
good
it.
Pass rush. Yeah. So, though they have good pieces of a pass rush, we'll see how they play. But nonetheless, that's it on the Chiefs. That's how I feel about it. So, as far as the rule change, I mean, fine, but like we're doing this because of one game.
Yep.
That's why. Because the most recent game. It's all like alarmism based on the most recent occurrence.
Well,
of something
well there's
that
more. To that uh-huh. point, there are other okay. rule changes being suggested and right down the same alley here. I'm going to read multiple that are all of similar vein. The Washington Redskins say subject all plays to coaches' challenges by teams or review by the officiating department. That would be one that could obviously make these games
college
last a lot
that.
Longer.
College does
all,
that.
All, yes, review all personal fouls as reviewable plays. That's also from the Redskins. Add review of personal fouls called or not called on the field as plays subject to coaches' challenges. That's from the Kansas City Chiefs. And then the Panthers, Eagles, Rams, and Seahawks all put in add review of player safety-related fouls called or not called on the field as plays subject to coaches' challenge.
Is there a specific example on that last one?
No, there is not.
I wonder if my first thought that popped into my head is like when a quarterback gets hit in the helmet or doesn't get hit in the helmet.
Yeah, that would be the assumption. I think that's the right assumption.
Because we saw in the Super Bowl, you know, they sort of happened. You know, Goff got his face mask grabbed, but then Brady got hit in the helmet. There was just all this other, all that kind of stuff that just I'm just kind of open always to reviewing these rules, but when the stuff just starts to seem teams seemingly pounce on the thing that just most recently happened to them, like maybe just take a breath for 6 months and realize that really only happened to us one time all year.
Right. Yeah. So for me, I think this is where I'll come down in Major League Baseball as well. If you can get a system in place, and there's a company that I knew someone who worked for them forever that was an instant replay company that would go to college games and do the review stuff. I forget the name of it. But if you can get a system in place where you have a sky judge, someone who's up in a booth, who's watching the game, whether from a sky cam, like a different angle that we don't get to see on TV, or from all the angles we have in front of us, who just reviews every play, or a couple of judges, whether, you know, it's the NHL that goes back to the home office, right, in Toronto, where they go and watch everything.
Yep.
I'm fine with that. And if, again, much like the robot umps in baseball, if there's a buzzer system or whatever where the review judge has to buzz the referee and say, hey, this one needs to be reviewed, stop play, or just says, hey, I don't see anything right away, let's keep moving. And that I'm fine with. The idea, though, that coaches can challenge anything, that's going to get out of hand. That's where it just, and especially saying not called on the field becomes that sort of, and slippery slope, whether you believe it as an argument or not, and there are people who will argue both sides of it, it does feel like that slowly opens up, well, you didn't call this, we think it happened, go review it. And I guess the rules need to be enforced, just like if they were called wrongly, if they weren't called wrongly, they should be then implemented. It just feels like a way to really bog down a game that already sees a ton of commercials, already is let's run for 3 yards and fall down. I know America loves it, but it feels like moving towards a much slower experience to attend a game live.
Oh, it'd be brutal. I've been to some long college games, man. Long.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yes, definitely.
4 hour overtime games. Like, I've been there. It's like in the moment, you're like, this is fun. Like, we're in overtime. We're in double overtime. And then you're really starting to think, like, man, I've been here for like 4 hours.
Yeah.
Like,
beer sales
ready
ended
to go.
3 hours ago. What is happening?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, that was at a time when the place I used to go, BC, didn't even have alcohol sales.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm
yep.
sitting there
yep.
like waiting to get back to the tailgate. Like, yeah, I was focused on the game, but at some point, like, we don't need to play a 4 hour football game. It just doesn't have to happen that way. So, you know, I don't know what the sweet spot is, but I don't think the NFL, here's what I'd say about reviewing every play. I don't think they'll get it right. That's why I would say no.
Okay.
I think the games would take forever, and I think you'll find that most of the plays are called correctly, and they do take time on some other ones. You know, look at the Edelman play; they took a long time to make sure that he didn't touch that ball
oh, yeah.
on that punt.
Yep.
And I, hand in the air, I don't think he touched it.
Yeah,
but I swear to you, I couldn't believe that they reversed it because it wasn't 100% to me.
Right.
I don't think he did. But that was that break that the Patriots fans are like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Like, you know, that was the one where like, they get so lucky all the time, which isn't entirely true. They just take advantage of the breaks. But that was the play. Like, they really did take their time with it. And I think they got it right. But there's like 35 to 40% of the people are like, no way, it touched his thumb. You know, so what do we know? How many times did you see that replay? 50?
Yep.
I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure. So, you know, like, this is all part of this. You have to try to take a step back and put yourself in their shoes. And, like, are we just going to keep reviewing plays that we're pretty sure on? Like, I've said this before, Dan. It's not the official's fault. It's the league's fault. They've not putting these guys in a position to succeed. And they've made the officials look like they're wrong all the time. That's the league's fault. They're not wrong all the time. It's the league's fault. People think the officiating is bottom of the barrel. And yeah, I do think they make a bunch of mistakes, but I don't think it's the official's fault. I think it's the league's fault.
I think two things I would want to see are technology driven in the NFL are sensors in the football on both ends, on the nose of the football.
Absolute no-brainer. Should have been done 10 years ago.
Put it on the goal line and put it on the sidelines so that when a punt is kicked and it goes out of bounds at the 25, we don't have a sideline judge running down with his hand in the air. And they are very good. Again, I don't want to make it sound like these guys are not good at their jobs. And now that they're more full time and that it's their focus, I think it's even better. But the idea that you have someone running from 15 yards back and can gauge the exit velocity, height, and distance from them comparatively to the sideline and can gauge accurately where that ball should be placed, I think is absurd. And I think the sensor on the ball for just where it should be placed on the field, like where the player went down, again, sideline judges running in, and maybe it's a half yard, maybe it's a yard here or there. But over time, those yards matter. And so why aren't we using the technology?
The eyeballing of the spots is the dumbest thing in football.
Exactly.
Period.
It makes no sense.
It's the dumbest thing.
Because you see these line judges sort of run in like they've been drinking a six-pack on the sideline. Like they sort of wobble in and then they look at each other and one leans one way and one leans the other.
We watched the Edelman play under a huge microscope many times while it was going on. Many times to determine within millimeters whether or not it had touched his thumb. But every first down in that game was like, yeah, it's sort of right there. I think it's sort of right there. And we'll just put it down. What do you mean it's sort of right there? Yeah, it's like sort of right there. Like, I'm pretty sure he landed right there. Well, did he sort of land right there, or did he actually land on the 41 and a quarter yard line? Because that's where it should be, not on the 41 and a half.
Right. And was he holding the ball against his numbers? Was he outstretched when he actually hit the turf? Was the ball where it blows my mind? I got into a discussion.
You just went through 15 teams submitting rule changes.
Yep.
And not one did we hear, can we get a microchip in the football? Maybe that's not part of the submission, but we need to get it.
Well, I think we're going to make it happen. Fantasy Sports Today, the weekend edition. We're going to call up Roger Goodell. We're
going
to let him know.
Let's get something going on Twitter. What's a good hashtag? What's a clever hashtag? We'll start doing it.
Deflate.
We'll see how much.
Does that work?
No, that's different. It's a different connotation.
Oh, boy. Good times, as always, here on Fantasy Sports Today. What has your eye today, Mike? What sports today or tomorrow?
I'm on college hoops today.
Yeah.
I'm in on college hoops today. I got to see what the schedule looks like. I bet you probably got some A-Sun basketball.
Yes, sir.
Might have a few others that are usually in
big
the mix.
Big Sky, maybe Big West. Yeah.
Big West is usually late. I know that because I've been to that tournament. Get decided late. So NCAA schedule today. I'll even tell you right now as we go to break. Oh, so many games. So many games. It's unbelievable. Championship week is upon us, Dan. So just check your local listings. We got Ohio Valley today.
There it is.
That finals tonight.
Enjoy your time off, Mr. Blewett.
Big South.
Stay tuned for Cam and George.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.